Welcome to the How and the Why. With John Barrett Ingalls. Exploring and celebrating the creative process and the creative purpose of authors, editors, and artists that make up and inspire the Black Hill Press family. Black Hill Press is dedicated to the novella. We believe a great story is never defined by its length. Let's get creative.
Welcome to the How and the Why, brought to you by Black Hill Press. I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Jennifer Acker, the editor-in-chief of The Common. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's jump right in. We'll dive right into this pool. And why don't you tell our listeners what The Common is for those who are uninformed?
Sure, be happy to do that. The Common is a relatively young literary magazine. Our first issue came out in the spring of 2011, and so we are now just completing our fourth publishing year. And we are a print and digital magazine. We come out twice a year in print and publish online pretty regularly, 3 to 4 days a week, with a variety of original content. And the mission of The Common is to publish work with a strong sense of place. And even the name of the magazine relates to this place-based mission, because the name is taken from the idea of the New England town common.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in New England and was always going to gatherings in my small hometown in the town common. And as I grew up a little bit and began to see other parts of the world, you see that there is an equivalent to the town common in most planned communities around the world, and these sort of public gathering spaces also just crop up in all sorts of communities. It's important to have some sort of common space.
Stories and share life experiences and ask questions about the town and what the goings-ons are.
Yeah, exactly. It's that space for interacting with other people, for storytelling, for observing. There are always those people who are on the margins just taking things in. There's all manner of life, since there are animals and children, multi-generational. And what's where people go their heads and think sometimes as well.
Hmm. Now, tell us a little bit about how you got this started. It's through Amherst College in Massachusetts. You were a lecturer there, or you were one of the faculty when you got this started?
So that came a little bit later, actually. So I'm an alum of Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first began thinking about starting a literary magazine and what that might be like, I was also living in Amherst. And my husband is a philosophy professor at Amherst College. And I had worked at the college after I graduated, and so I had really quite invested in the place. And as someone who is interested in writing and literary history, it was surprising that Amherst, with its great tradition of David Foster Wallace and Emily Dickinson and newer writers like Lauren Groff, that the college did not have a professional magazine. There had been something that had been started by students on and off, but nothing sustained. And so I began talking to the college, maybe talking to some of my former professors and the administration right around the time that the economy was crashing, a very auspicious time for thinking about launching a new literary magazine. but just sort of to get the wheel started. But it was important that the magazine be based somewhere that really cared about literature. And since the magazine started and I got my own MFA, then I began doing some teaching at the college as well. So I have taught a couple of different kinds of classes at Amherst.
So you just have this connection, and then the Common came out of your connection to the school.
Yeah, it grew out of wanting to create some kind of new literary community in our area, and having this desire to create a venue for place-based literature, and then having this connection with an institution that I hoped would be interested.
So give us a little, you talk about this sense of place. You're looking for works that when you read them, you feel like the place itself is an integral part of the story, or the essay, or a character in and of itself. Is that
exactly
right?
Yeah. The sense of place is the driving force behind the magazine. It's what I look for in every piece across genres. And I was intrigued by this idea because it seems kind of old-fashioned. You know, we think of sense of place as belonging either to a particular generation, like Faulkner, or a particular region, again, Faulkner, or Welty, with the South, or maybe with the West. But it seemed to me that there were so many of us who had grown up either within or outside of rooted traditions, that were really interested in questions about what it means to be from somewhere, what does it mean to move around a lot, what does it mean to interact with people who are from different places. And it seemed that by using place as an angle, or as sort of the lens for various kinds of relationships, we could understand a lot about the things that we care about in stories, psychology, changes in emotion, various kinds of development, our relationship with the world around us, both physical and other people.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel like character, you know, is highly dependent on where the character is from. That can define who that person is, you know, that sense of place adds so much to who you're reading about.
Yeah, I really think that we are shaped to a pretty great extent by the environments that we grow up in, and that very early on we develop this sense of what's home and what's away, and what it means to leave home, go to a new place and make it your home. And to have a feeling of homelessness or placelessness, and even beyond things like exile or migration or various kinds of displacement, there are all kinds of ways in which, how we look at the world, the way we talk, who we're interested in hanging out with, what we notice in the world around us, are shaped by our places.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, you said you grew up in New England, and that's kind of been your home, and I'm sure no matter what part of it, you have that sense of home. I feel the same way about California. I grew up in Northern California and live in Southern. So this entire state, even though it's vast, I still have that familiarity with this place, and then it gets even more intense when I get closer to my actual hometown. But you travel a lot as well. And so I've read through some of your works, and it feels like that sense of place, that idea of foreign and making the foreign more familiar plays a part in a lot of your writings as well.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that our sense of place is constantly being refined also, or it's changing because of various life experiences. And I do love to travel, and I'm just interested in the contrast between places, how cultures and people are different, and what are the reasons behind those differences. And they're vast, of course, but I have sort of begun to see the world through this lens of environment, which of course shapes, you know, how people interact, various cultural institutions and waves of migration. So yeah, I almost never say no to going somewhere new, and that kind of curiosity and interest has been something that I don't have a lot of control over. It just seems to be a part of who I am.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting too. You talk about the common, or this place where, you know, back in the day everybody would gather and share stories of life. It's also the place where the majority of the people spent their time in this little town or village or community. But that's where you would hear the stories from those few who would go and travel. So they would get to experience the world, the people who never left, from the stories of those who did in this common. And I feel like having a strong sense of place can allow us to travel to places that we might never get the opportunity to go to.
Right. And literature excels at that. It says medium for storytelling. I think that's nicely put, and that one would go to the common to hear about the exploits of other people, and maybe to think about what your own aspirations were, and if you wanted to leave, or if you wanted to stay, or do some combination of those things. And it's that idea of that tension that we have now with increased mobility, as you said, that sort of back in the day people used to go to the common and hear stories, and now we're all so mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And technology allows us to in some ways stay connected with many places at once. But I think that while that mobility is wonderful because it provides so many options, it has a kind of subtle destabilizing effect for some of us, at least. And I'm always interested in stories from people, both friends and in literature, about what it's like to move around a lot, either by choice or by necessity. I think a lot of interesting things can come out of those observations.
Yeah, the concept of what is home, and how do you find home if you're constantly mobile? How do you develop that sense of this is my home instead of this is just the place I am right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people do that through relationships. I think many people would say that home is becomes a home, or a place becomes a home because of the people who are there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. But how do you meet those people, and what are the spaces in which you interact with them? So in that way, still the environment and the physical space, I think, has some impact on our relationships.
That's funny. I read this, maybe off subject, but just interesting, and this conversation is making me think about it, that 200 years ago, in a lifetime, a person, or maybe, I don't have the exact time, but it was something like 200 or something like that, a person in their lifetime would see as many people, or have interaction with as many people as we have on a daily basis. Say people live maybe 300.
Right.
But, you know, you live in this little small community, and really that common was the only place that you would interact with people. And you wouldn't, you know, you'd see maybe 150, 200 some odd people that lived in that little community, however many people would be in that common. But now on a daily basis, we walk, we drive, we talk on the phone, we go to the teller, we go to the checkout lady at the grocery store, and we're having interactions so fast that we're not even able to register that we're having human interaction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or think about an airport or, you know, any kind of transportation hub where there are just so many people, they're crossing paths in ways that our ancestors would have found unimaginable, I think.
Right. Yeah, being in a subway car or with hundreds of people who, that might be your interaction for an entire lifetime, just in that one subway station.
Right. It really is amazing how many places we're able to get to because of the airplane, and how many people we can come in contact with, and of course
cultures.
Cultures. And all of the virtual communications we have, the number of people we email with who we never meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Facebook phenomenon of having these friends that, you know, you get to see everything that's happening in their lives and never talk to them.
Mm-hmm. It's bizarre.
Yeah. You know, I also think about, makes me think about Louis C.K. had this thing that he was talking about, the strangers that reoccur in your life, or you see that stranger, you don't have an interaction with them, but then later on that day you see that same stranger. And he said that, he's like, maybe God was running out of extras when they're creating your life. And so they're like, well, we'll put that guy here again. Well, no, we just saw him on the train. We can't have him in the coffee shop as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right, those very subtle reappearances.
So, I'm a little off track, but in a fun way. All right, so let's talk about your submission process for the common. How would a writer go about getting something to you, and what exactly do you look for besides this idea of sense of place?
Right. The place is central. Any piece that we publish would have place would be significant in some way. But the place can be variously defined. It could be a hospital room. It could be some space of the future. It could be a science fictional space,
mm-hmm.
Or a metaphorical space. So we interpret place pretty broadly. And I also think that we embody or publish a pretty wide range of styles, from more experimental to more traditional. And that's certainly the case with our poetry, a wide variety of styles that our poetry editor selects. And in terms of the fiction and nonfiction, I've been really pleasantly surprised by things that I've liked that if they had been described to me, I might not have thought that I would like them. I do like there to be some, not an event or not a consequence, I don't necessarily think that's important, but when I get to the end of the piece, I do want to know why I've been told this story, or why I've been given this character's history or this slice of life. I want to be able to understand what the consequence or the impact is. That it's a fundamental question. Why am I being told this story on this occasion?
Right.
And so look for when selecting pieces. I also want to learn about the world. I want to learn about how people I've never met before think. And so stories that successfully do that with language, innovatively, or maybe not creating new sentence structures or new words, but using conventional language very beautifully,
mm-hmm.
that's always going to draw me in.
So you have your printed version, and then you have online. Is it the same thing, or do you have different content for the different mediums?
In the two print issues, we publish short stories and poetry and essays and images. We try to curate some selection of either archival or contemporary work or both in the print magazine. And the print content is available online. Everything that we publish in print is available online. In addition to that, we have a digital magazine which publishes content that doesn't appear in print. And those are pieces like interviews and book reviews. We also do publish poetry online. We've just started a podcast series, actually. Some
I
audio
like podcasts.
Recordings. Podcasts are great. They're great. We're trying to get in on the game because they're so great. And we've begun to launch those, and our format has been putting contributors from the same issue in conversation with each other about the
work. Very cool. I love artists interviewing artists.
So we've been trying to facilitate those conversations with people, people talking to each other about their work that's occurring between the same covers. So we're constantly thinking of new features that we can publish online, that we can develop ways to explore place, but also to give us excuses to talk to people we wouldn't ordinarily be able to talk to. And so we don't yet publish fiction online, but we do publish some long-form essays as well, both shorter and longer essays. So if somebody sends a piece in that's nonfiction, we'll consider it both for print and for the common online.
Now, the actual physical process of submitting, I know you have two different reading periods, and you use Tell It Slant. Explain exactly what Tell It Slant is for submissions.
It's a submissions manager system, just like many of the others that are out there. It's relatively new. It started by a friend of mine around the same time that that I was starting The Common, and I was excited by the vision that she presented of a submission system that seemed like it would be easy to use. So we've been using that for the last several years. But it's pretty straightforward, uploading your manuscripts to a central database where we go in and read them and share them with other readers electronically.
Oh, very cool. And it's not that expensive. I've had other journals where you have to spend like a $35 submission fee or, $10, $5. But you do the Tell It Slant, it's $1.50 for each submission.
Yeah, our submission now is $1.50, and that's actually not charged by us, but charged by Tell It Slant to maintain their processes. All of these submissions managers need some kind of fee system in order to keep their software going. They have their own platform that they have to keep up. We haven't yet run any contests in which we charge an entry fee, but certainly a lot of journals do. And I think that contests and that offer a subscription to writers or some kinds of engagement with the magazine are a good way to go and something that we might do in the future. In general, I'm not opposed to charging a modest submission fee. And given that there are so many writers applying to submitting to journals, there are also a lot of journals. But given that so many journals are staffed by volunteers and nonprofits and are struggling to raise funds to pay their contributors, to make a nice product that really honors their writers, who they publish. I think a modest submission fee is fine.
Now, what about for the images and the artwork? Do you accept submissions for that, or do you curate that on your own and discover newer artists?
We have run a couple of image contests. One of our previous art editor ran a couple of image contests for contemporary artists. One for drawings, black and white drawings, and one for photography. And we have a new art editor now who's in charge of curating the art section of the magazine. So we don't have open submissions for that. That's work that she solicits and curators that she works with.
And not only are you the editor-in-chief of The Common, you're also a writer and actively working on things. How has starting this journal affected you as a writer? Do you find yourself, because you're constantly reading and constantly editing, do you find yourself writing a little differently, or has nothing changed? I mean, I'm silly question. I'm sure everything informs everything, but...
It does. I think anyone who's ever been through a writing workshop notices how reading other people's work and putting some pressure on yourself to think thoughtfully about somebody else's effort and your own responses to it notices that has an effect on your own writing. And that's certainly been true for me. And I think I've learned a lot from doing the kind of editing that I've done and working with a variety of writers who are all unique and embrace different styles. I think there are several things that happen. One is simply just reading large amounts of submissions and making that a basis for thinking about how am I responding, why am I responding in this way, what do I think is really excellent here, what am I finding conventional and not fresh, what kinds of things might I want to keep in mind with my own work. So there's that sort of broad reading and the ongoing conversation I have with myself about the pieces that I'm reading. And then there's the actual sort of digging in editing work. When you work with a writer on a piece and trying to get inside a piece from somebody else's point of view and thinking about what their intentions are and also trying to maintain a kind of, your own reader's perspective. And that has taught me a lot about structure. I don't know how successfully I've been able to implement those changes in my own work, but it's certainly something that I'm much more conscious of, that as an editor, you have to see the big picture in a way that when you're a writer and you're inside of something, it's really tough to do. That's always been hard for me.
Yeah, me too. I can't imagine anybody... I hate editing my own stuff. I've said this to other editors I interview. I don't want to say I'm horrible at it. I don't like that process. It's like my least favorite. So I don't know how people choose to do that.
Why don't you like it?
Well, first off, I don't like going back and reading through what I wrote, especially on larger. I look at, I have 220 pages that I need to go back and read through, and it just seems, I feel like I'm back at school, or the writing is just me writing. I become really attached to the things that I write down, so it's hard for me to discern what needs to go and what should stay.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about other people editing your work, or when you give it to a friend for feedback?
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd rather just write it and then hand it off and then have somebody come with a big red pen and then I'll go back and fix it.
Yeah, that's pretty enjoyable. Actually, it is a real pleasure to have someone give that kind of close reading and attention to your work. I agree.
Yeah. And you're currently working on a novel, which I don't know how you have time to do that, but that's wonderful.
Thanks. Yes, there's not that much time, as it turns out. Literary magazines are like infants. They're hungry all the time. I'm not a parent, but that's what my friends who are parents tell me.
Well, you are a parent. You're a parent of the commons.
There we go. Exactly. So it's this very sort of needy little enterprise that's always telling me things that could make its life better.
Mm.
And so thinking about that and trying to balance that with my own writing work and with my work as a teacher when I in the semesters when I do teach is definitely a challenge.
Well, thank you. We're out of time. I hope you finish that book. I'd love to read it. I love reading what you have on your website of your own writing, but I love the web journal. What would you call it? A literary web magazine? What would you call it?
I think I refer to the Common Online as our digital magazine. So we
digital
have a,
magazine.
Yeah, a print magazine and a digital magazine.
It's great. The artwork's great. And I hope everybody goes out and subscribes and starts reading all the wonderful things that you're printing.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to answer all of your good questions and to think about them. And I'm honored that you have so many about the common and for me. So thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
This has been The How and the Why by Black Hill Press. I'm John Barrett Ingalls. The show was produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly. The music is Mea Lua by Bossa Zuzu. I wanted to thank everybody for your creativity and your inspiration, and to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.